chapter. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him. Then he began to speak and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." The Gospel of the Lord. This has been the week of alternate facts. So happily living into this new way of understanding the world, for me, the alternate facts are that the Green Bay Packers and the Pittsburgh Steelers made it to the Super Bowl. And in addition, the Pittsburgh Steelers will beat the Green Bay Packers and win yet one more Super Bowl ring. I don't know why that's funny, but today I don't want to focus on alternate facts, but I do want to focus on alternate community. For the gospel text today invites and guides us in how to become and live into an alternate community. Now, this alternate vision of the world first asks us, what does it mean to live into an alternate community? Then second, what it means to live as an alternate community in the promise that God is going to reverse everything at the end. And finally, that leads us to take a look at the social action of the alternate community. So living in alternate community, living into the promise of reversal, and the social action of the alternate community. Living into the alternate community, in this section of Matthew, chapters 5, 6, and 7, we have what is called the Sermon on the Mount. There are five sections in the Gospel of Matthew that strive to accomplish the same purpose, which is to give Jesus' teaching on what the will of God is for the world. Chapter 5, the Sermon on the Mount, does that. Chapter 10 gives us a mission discourse, how we live out our mission. Chapter 13 gives a bunch of parables that challenge the status quo and don't allow people to be complacent. Chapter 18, Jesus gives God's will that relationships are built on care and reconciliation. And finally, in chapters 24 and 25, Jesus talks about God's will in the light of the end times and what is going to happen. Each of these give us God's will. It asks us to understand that God's empire is the empire that will reign over this world. And in God's empire, we learn at the very end of chapter 4, before coming into chapter 5, God's empire ensures blessings of plenty for all people, and God's empire ensures health for all people. God's empire is marked by then the call for justice. God's empire is marked by a transformed social relationship. It's marked by practices of piety that shape the lives who live in God's kingdom. And finally, God's empire is marked with shared and accessible resources for all people. God's will is not found in any particular form of governing, and it will not be identified with any form of government where injustice and discrepancy of wealth shape its policies. Jesus talks to the disciples as he outlines God's will. And it is a reminder to us that anytime Jesus talks to his disciples in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is also speaking to us, for we are the disciples of Jesus. And we shape our identity, we shape our lifestyle around what Jesus teaches. And when that new way of living is put into place, we become an alternate community to what the world has to offer. And so we now are called to engage in the life of alternate community. Living a life of alternate community then means that we live into the promise of reversal, that God is going to turn everything upside down when everything is set right. In the gospel reading for today, we have a series of 9 blessings that are put in front of us. The first 4, the blessings that appear in verses 3-6, the blessings to those who are poor in spirit, to those who are grieving, to those who are meek, and to those who are hungry or thirsty, those first 4 blessings can each be divided into 2 parts. So you're following the math so far, right? The first part of those blessings declares God's favor. And God's favor is specifically given to those who are powerless, those who are poor, those who don't have resources, and those who are out of option. God sides distinctively with those who are powerless, without resources, and don't have any other options in front of them. And God shows favor among people who yearn for God to intervene in the world and to set it right. Now, the second half of each one of those beatitudes, as they are called, other than the blessing, is a promise of reversal. And so those who are poor in spirit will be rich in spirit. Those who grieve will be filled with joy. Those who are meek will inherit the earth. Those who are hungry and thirsty will have an abundance of food and drink. That's what God does to those with whom God shows favor. God reverses the fortune, and in setting the world right, God gives those gifts to those who never had them before. This reversal is captured in Psalm 37. If you look at the last 2 verses of Psalm 37, you can find the psalmist say, "But the deliverance of the righteous comes from the Lord. He is their stronghold in the time of trouble. The Lord will help them and rescue them. He will rescue them from the wicked and deliver them, because they seek refuge in Him." Living in alternative community is about receiving the blessing of God and anticipating, as God sets the world, a reversal. In a conversation with a colleague and friend this week, he reminded me of a chapter in Plato's Republic, Chapter 8 specifically, where Plato talks about democracy. And it's fascinating how something written so long ago can really still resonate with us now. And Plato, in chapter 8, he talks about what will lead democracy to tyranny. And what Plato contends is that when you get to the point where everyone is seen as equal, which is what a democracy wants to do, it opens the door for tyranny. And so what he goes on to say is this is what will undo a democracy, when men and women are found to be equal, when children and adults are found to be equal, when slaves and masters are found to be equal, and even when animals and people are found to be equal. And if you don't believe that animals and people are equal, look at the extraordinary give for the last couple of years. The group until this past year that got the most money, dogs. What Plato will say is that when all becomes equal, it opens the door to tyranny. It opens the door to tyranny because for a democracy to work, it requires both an individual to be able to grow and assert his or her rights. And in tension to that, it requires people coming together as a community where everyone is involved in the decision-making process. What we have seen in our democracy is the elevation of the individual right, but in the divisiveness in which we live, we don't have that gathering of people to make decisions for the common good. And so we don't have that tension, and democracy becomes vulnerable to tyranny. Now, here's the problem that we as Christians then create with that understanding. Listen to how Paul describes the Christian community. There is no longer any distinction between you. No distinction, male and female. No distinction, slave and master. No distinction between the faithful and the non-believer. And so the very nature of Christian community leads to tyranny. We must ask, however, who is the tyrant? And the tyrant is God. And we can live with that because God is merciful. God gives blessings. God sets right. God is benevolent, beneficent. So we can live as God, as our tyrant. But how do we address the political concept of democracy? To address that, we as God's people and people in this world are called to reestablish community. And in reestablishing community, this reestablishment is rooted on the social action of the community. So as we live into alternate community and we live into this promise of reversal, we also then are called for social action as God's people. As I mentioned before, there are 9 Beatitudes in this reading for today. The first 4 talk about God's favor and the divine reversal. The second 5 talk about social action. Those who show mercy are blessed. Those who engage in pure actions and thoughts are blessed. Those who strive to make peace in the community are blessed. Those who are persecuted for the sake of others are blessed. Those who are reviled and rejected in trying to do good are blessed. The second set of these Beatitudes is a call to social action. Social action is part of being part of an alternate community. Now, there's an interesting component to this social action that Matthew brings us to at the end of the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 5, and it's that wonderful story of separating the sheep and the goats. And as a kid, I never quite understood it, because, like, why is God biased against goats and for sheep or whatever? But it's the story of the master at the end making a decision and sending one into blessing and one into condemnation. And it's said that you're chosen to do that because when I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. When I was naked, you gave me clothing. Whenever I was sick, you offered me health care. Whenever I was in prison or detained, you visited me and honored who I was. And what Jesus does in telling that parable is that he lifts up those who are not believers and says, even those who are not my disciples have the capacity to do what is right. And notice what is right. When people are hungry, see that there are systems in place for them to eat. When people are thirsty, we make sure they have water and make sure it's safe water to drink. When people are alone and they're different than us, we make sure we still welcome them into our midst. When people have nothing to wear, we see that they are clothed. When people are sick, we make sure they receive all of the health care that they need. And when people are detained or in prison, we advocate on their behalf. And we join with other people in this world who may not be Christian, but believe in the same values. Notice then, when our call to social action, we then don't have this binary, this either you're sacred or you're secular. We see that we all come together and engage in social action as a way to heal the world. And what Luke Bretherton does in his book says that is the way that we resurrect democracy. When Bretherton is talking about what this community is like, which is a community of Christians, a community of the agnostic, those who are atheists, a community of Muslim and Jewish and Buddhist and all other parts of the community, is this extraordinarily eclectic group of people. When that group comes together for the sake of social action, it's first of all important for them to become informed. And in becoming informed, they seek to understand the situation in which they find themselves, to get the history, to get an understanding of what is happening in that moment. In becoming informed, they strive to learn where the power really is. You have those who are elected to power, and then you have those who are self-declared having power. It's learning the topography of power, he says. And he goes on to say to become informed requires a campaign of listening. And not listening to the people who will agree with you, but listening to the voices of those who are struggling because of the broken systems in our world. That's part of information and learning. Bretherton goes on to say, then after that process of information, there's the process of identification. And that is determining what is the issue. He makes a distinction between issue and problem. And if you look at the uprisings, these huge groups of people that have done the marches, And for example, the Occupy Wall Street group, they were together because they were a gathering of people who were against something. But there's no missional energy in gathering and being against something. Because you think you agree until you start talking to the person, and then you realize you're just together because you're angry at the world, and you don't even agree with the person who's also marching with you. The call is to identify the issues, and that is a naming of what one wants to happen. In doing that, we need to be aware that anger will kick into that process. But can we focus that anger on ways that contest the way it is right now? And in identifying the issue, we find unity not in all agreeing, but taking the risk to say what we believe is right. A number of years ago, after our national church voted on the issue of human sexuality, and there was really a great turmoil among many congregations in our country, one of our bishops said this: "I am not going to say what I believe is right because I want to maintain the unity of the church." Ironically, that doesn't maintain the unity of the church. What maintains the unity of the church is creating space for people to say what they believe is right, and then engaging with the other person to find out where they stand together. Real dialogue, Brotherton says, must take sides. It must recognize any conflict of interest. It must not mistake the dominant viewpoint as consensus. That is, it doesn't assume that white male Christian is the right solution. And after information and identification is initiation. This initiation must be strategic, which means we ask the question, what needs to happen so that we can address our issue and get the response we want? What needs to happen? This initiation then borrows from other patterns and organizations and adapts it to their own way of being. It becomes entrepreneurial in the way that it promotes itself. And this initiation is for the purpose of forming a common life among a nation of people. That's the social action of the alternate community. And that's our call. This alternate vision of the world, then, is that we live into an alternate community, and we live into the promise of reversal, whereas God sets it right, God turns it upside down, and we accept the social action that is necessary as part of an alternate community. At the end of the Beatitudes, Jesus says this: "You in the alternate community are the salt of the earth. So go and be salty. You are the light of the world. Go and be brilliant." Because we are engaged in God's transforming mission in the community. And that transforming mission is believing that resurrection power changes what is happening. God puts it this way through Micah: "This is what is good. Do justice. Love kindly. And walk humbly with God. Not because you want to, but because God requires it of you." Amen.